Welcome to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life, the trials, the tribulations, and the triumphs. Discussions about how faith matters to you and our community. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, whose mission is to extend Christian ministry by caring for the whole person, body, mind, and spirit, and by working with others to improve health and quality of life in our communities. Now, here's your host, Tom McGovern.
Welcome to Faith Matters. My special guest this Sunday afternoon is Richard Bateman. Richard and I are good friends. We've had many conversations in the past, and I'm looking forward, Richard, to our continuing conversation this Sunday afternoon. Richard, you recently retired as Associate Professor of Practice with the Department of Petroleum Engineering. What in the name of heavens is an Associate Professor of Practice?
Well, it's a professor who actually has done what he's trying to teach, so I think there's a...
You bring the richness of your professional experience now to the classroom so that the upcoming engineers know the world that they're facing in the world of work.
That's exactly right. In my teaching time at Tech, I was always pleased to include some personal anecdotes to illustrate the principles that I was trying to get across to them. So.
And also the color of that unique profession that you call your own.
We have some wonderful characters in what we refer to as the International Oil Patch. These fine ladies and gentlemen work in extraordinary, difficult circumstances all around the world and produce the lifeblood of industry for all of us.
Let's go back to the beginning, Richard. You were born in England. What part of England were you born in?
I was born in Wiltshire, in the town of Salisbury, which is famous for a 900-year-old Gothic cathedral in which I was baptized. It's also unique in that it has one of the four remaining copies of the Magna Carta on display. Also very close to where I was born is the monolithic monument Stonehenge, whose mysteries have still not been properly sussed out. But it was fun in my youth to get on my bicycle and ride out there. Although I shouldn't confess it, I will. Somewhere on one of those stones, I have carved my initials with a penknife. Today, you can't get within 100 miles of touching one of those stones.
It's covered in glass now, actually. The last time I was there, wonderful memories of the cathedral that Salisbury is. I was there for evensong for Compline one evening and one Sunday evening. Absolutely magnificent. The wonder of God surely resonated in the voices in that wonderful, wonderful ancient bastion of faith. Born there and then grew up in Salisbury. You said a very formative, tragic event, really, in your lifetime was the death of your father.
I was almost 13. He was a passenger on one of the Comet aircraft that crashed. This was the one that crashed a little bit after taking off from Calcutta in a thunderstorm. Everyone was killed. That completely changed the life that I might have had if he had lived. Ironically, British Airways, who footed the bill for my education, meant that I had a better education, perhaps, than I might have had my father not died. But, of course, nothing can replace growing up with a father, so.
And you've shared with me the poignant story of the watch. Would you share that with our listeners this afternoon, too?
Yes. A few weeks after the crash, one of my father's associates came to the house, and with great formality, he presented me with my father's watch, and he said that just prior to takeoff, my father had lent his watch to this associate because the associate's watch had gone wrong, I don't know what. And my father said, well, I don't need a watch because I'll be home in 24 hours. So I kept this watch almost as a talisman, and I never, ever got on an airplane to go for a flight without having the watch with me because I always thought that if my father had had the watch with him, then the plane might not have crashed. Many, many years later, my mother passed away, and sorting through her items, I found the evidence that, in fact, the watch had not been given to the associate at all. It had been spotted by an Indian policeman who found a beggar with a watch on his wrist and said, "Which body did you get it off?" And it turned out they tracked it back that it had been taken from my father's body. It's a very weird story.
Fast forward to university. Where did you attend university in England?
At Oxford. I read physics. Believe it or not, one of my classmates was someone who today is far better known than I am, Stephen Hawking. We were in the same year, graduated at the same time. He went on, of course, to do his doctorate at Cambridge and get into black holes. I went into the oil patch, and I also studied the black holes, which is, which is what oil wells look like when you look inside them.
Here's the richness of space, and you are the richness of our Earth. What attracted you to petroleum engineering to begin with?
Well, actually, it was accidental. My first job on graduation was with a firm of what they call in the UK chartered patent agents. I learned how to write patent claims and to argue with the examiners as to the legitimacy of my clients' claims that what they'd invented was new. A while working on that, I got restless and I went back to the appointments board at the university and said, here's what I'd like to do. The gentleman who was running this appointments board said to me, "Well, sounds to me like what you want to be is a paid tourist." Well, I said, "Yes, that would be nice." So he pulled down off the shelf a little booklet put out by the Schlumberger Company. He also put me onto the British Antarctic Survey, who needed people to go to the South Pole and read thermometers. So I pursued both of those possibilities. I even got a psychological clearance from the British Antarctic Survey. But at that same time, Schlumberger came in with an offer which was three times bigger than what the British Antarctic Survey was willing to pay.
In terms of salary, yeah.
In salary. So it was a no-brainer. So after a short training period in Colombia, in Barranquilla, Colombia, with Schlumberger, they sent me to Tierra del Fuego. In Punta Arenas, which is one of the most southerly cities in the world, I was peacefully drinking a beer and I heard a bunch of Brits talking, so I went and asked them why they were there and what they were doing, and they said, "Oh, we're with the Royal Research Ship, RSS Shackleton, with the British Antarctic Survey, and we're heading south tomorrow." And they produced a little Zippo lighter, and I still have it to the day. Of course, it doesn't work, but...
What does it read?
It says, RRS Shackleton, British Antarctic Survey.
Richard, we take a brief break now and we'll be back in a few moments to continue this fascinating conversation. Thank you.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, celebrating Covenant Heart and Vascular Institute. Since 1965, Covenant has brought together cardiac physicians, nurses, and professionals whose sacred mission is compassionate care for every patient. More information is available on cardiac care online at www.covenanthealth.org. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Now again, your host, Tom McGovern.
Welcome back to Faith Matters, our fascinating guest this Sunday afternoon, Richard Bateman. How long were you in Tierra del Fuego on your first trip there, Richard?
I was there a year and a half. The way the company worked was that you had to be on call 24/7 for a year and a half. And then you got something like a three-month holiday, which was great because there's nothing to spend your money on in Tierra del Fuego. So I went back to the UK, bought cash, an E-type Jaguar.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Spent an interesting 3 months driving this very fast and sexy car around the West End of London. Occasionally, of course, there would be someone sitting in the passenger seat.
Okay. So, did you venture into the provinces at all?
I went up the M1 and made it all the way to Edinburgh. In fact, while I was there, there was no speed limit on freeways, but they brought one in about halfway through my vacation. There was one last time I could drive 110 miles an hour. The next day, we had to throttle it back. So,
in our conversation previous to coming on air, Richard, you mentioned that you've been in how many countries?
Altogether 43. Of those, there were about seven where I could say I lived for an extended period. An extended period is defined by the point in time when somebody says, you really need to get a driver's license here or an identity card, which varied whichever country you were in. Usually the deal was you went in as an innocent tourist and then hid in the jungles and nobody knew you were still in the country. So it was pretty lax in those days.
Okay. But most of your time has been in the United States.
Yes. I've lived more years in the United States than anywhere else. Second would be the UK, where I grew up. And then after that comes Argentina. I spent a long time in Argentina, about 12 years altogether, working for different companies. So
you've seen countries from the vantage point, really, of being a petroleum engineer, not being in a city, but getting out into the countryside and getting to know the terrain and the people.
That's true. That's true, yes. The places where the good Lord has placed oil are not necessarily under big cities, with the possible exception of Los Angeles. Other than that, it's usually either in a snake-infested swamp or a mosquito-infested jungle, or, as in the case of Tierra del Fuego, bitterly cold and very high winds.
Richard, as you remember Tierra del Fuego, of course, the romantic Irish side of me is fascinated by winds, by high seas, and, of course, by the tremendous challenge of that particular part of God's creation. What are some of your lasting memories of Tierra del Fuego?
Probably the social aspect, because while I was down there, I was introduced to this wonderful book called The Uttermost Part of the Earth, written by E. Lucas Bridges. And he was the son of Thomas Bridges. Thomas Bridges was a foundling found on a bridge, and he was brought up by some missionaries. And the missionaries used to send ministers out to the Falkland Islands, which the Argentines would call Las Malvinas today. Thomas Bridges, when he was 15, went out to the Falklands, and on a side trip, he went to Tierra del Fuego. He went on to be an ordained minister, and he went back with his wife to start a mission in Tierra del Fuego. He learned the local languages, which were very intricate. His sons and daughters ended up being magnificent sheep farmers. And while I was down there, I visited their ranch for a weekend. And there's a lot of good stories.
Capture for me and for the listeners some of the magic of these ranches.
Well, first, they're very, very large, huge numbers of acres, and they have enormous quantities of sheep. Other interesting thing is that there are little flecks of gold in the dirt where this stubby grass is growing, and a sheep, which is more than 3 or 4 years old, has munched enough to where they have gold teeth. People don't believe this. There was a mining engineer called Julio Popa who started a gold mine down there in Tierra del Fuego, and that could be another session altogether talking about Julio Popa. He was fantastic character. In fact, all of southern Argentina and Chile is full of interesting folks. Even Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid were down there.
But it's a good point at this point perhaps to introduce a fascinating book that you have written. It's Adventures in the Oil Patch by Richard Bateman. Would you read a little for us from that?
Yes, I will. This talks about a town called Comodoro Rivadavia, which is named after a naval commodore. This town is about halfway down the Atlantic coast of Argentina, and it has another claim to fame apart from being a pioneer oil-producing city. In 1902, two North Americans and a woman appeared in Patagonia and managed to pull off a series of daring robberies. Their names were Bob Evans, Willie Wilson, and Etta Place. Sometime around 1911, they were finally killed by the local Argentine police near Rio Pico, close to the Andes and the Chilean border. To the rest of the world, these outlaws are today known as Butch Cassidy, born Robert Leroy Parker, and the Sundance Kid, born Harry Longabaugh. And no, they did not die in Bolivia, as the movie suggested, at least not according to reliable sources in Patagonia. And you can see works by Bruce Chatwin and another author, Albejon. The museum in Bariloche has neat photos of the miscreants, which the curators will show you if you ask politely. I did, and they obligingly held them up for me to take my own photos of their historic ones. Bolivia can claim Ernesto Che Guevara. At least Patagonia should be allowed to keep Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
How lovely. How lovely. What a beautiful remembrance that connects so many civilizations and in a very, shall we say, colorful way as part of your adventures in the oil patch. Richard, we will take a short break. We'll be back in a few moments to continue this fascinating conversation.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, celebrating Covenant Heart and Vascular Institute. Since 1965, Covenant has brought together cardiac physicians, nurses, and professionals whose sacred mission is compassionate care for every patient. More information is available on cardiac care online at www.covenanthealth.org. The views, opinions, and comments that are expressed on this program are solely those of the host and guest and do not necessarily reflect or represent the views and opinions of KTTZ-FM, Texas Tech Public Media, Texas Tech University, Texas Tech University System, or our faculty and staff, our affiliates, our partners, and our sponsors. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Now again, your host, Tom McGovern.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. My guest, your guest, Richard Bateman. And Richard, you have been sharing with us fascinating stories from your adventures in 43 countries. You have been intimately involved in the oil industry in so many places, but you have a fascinating story early on in your time in the U.S., Tell us about one of your early adventures in Hobbs.
The oil patch runs in cycles of boom and bust. In the middle to late 60s, there was a boom going on, so engineers that had been working in South America were moved to the U.S., and I was sent to work in West Texas, New Mexico, and from a base in Hobbs. It's interesting, I remember my first day in Hobbs, which was in late 1967, I parked outside the Hobbs, New Mexico post office and ran in to buy a stamp and post a letter. When I came out, there was a cop standing by my car swinging a billy club. "Did you park this here vehicle?" This was a three-syllable word for a car. "Why, yes, officer," I replied after I had made a translation of the West Texas twang. "Well, in that case, you is going to see the judge." And so saying, he wrote me a ticket for diagonal parking with the rear of the car to the sidewalk. What I'd done was there was no place to park in the direction I was going, so I just backed across this highway, tail end into the curb. I found my way to the judge's office, and this fine justice of the peace was slouched in a large leather chair with his booted feet up on the desk and a toothpick in his mouth. He silently read the summons and then asked me how long I had been in town. 4 hours, I replied. He immediately picked up on my foreign accent, lowering his boots to the floor and straightening up, the better to inspect the strange creature before him. He asked, "Where's you from, anyhow?" "England," I replied in my best just-off-the-boat limey accent. "Oh, get out of here," he waved a dismissive hand as he tore up the summons. As I left, I mused about the law of the West. I kind of liked it.
What was your first impression, Richard, apart from having the ticket dismissed? What was your first impression of West Texas and eastern New Mexico?
A lot of crazy people out there. Saturday mornings, there would be people running around with gunny sacks, catching rattlesnakes, and this was a competition to see who could catch the most. My boss took me out for a ride in his Cadillac, took me around a corner at a very high rate of speed, asked me, had I noticed that the car didn't tilt over any? And I said, "Well, how did you manage that?" He said, "I got 800 pounds of lead in the floor." So I said, "That's great. Lowers the center of gravity, but what about your gas mileage?" "Well, I get about 3 miles a gallon." A lot of beautiful places to visit from Hobbs, New Mexico. I did everything. I did the Grand Canyon, the Painted Desert, the petrified forest, the underground, what, caverns?
Carlsbad, yeah.
Carlsbad, yes. So it was a good time to be in Hobbs.
The 43 countries you've been in, this is not necessarily judging one civilization, one country against another. From the top of your head this afternoon, Richard, which is the most colorful place you've been?
Well, I think you had to say Argentina and Buenos Aires. I have many, many happy memories of lots of lovely places. Argentina is a fantastic country geographically. It stretches from way down in the south at latitude 55 to way up in the north with the border with Bolivia and Brazil, which is tropical. So you have everything from an Arctic desert to a jungle. It's wonderful.
So Argentina, colorful music, people, terrain, the whole thing.
Terrible politicians.
But as you reflect, Richard, on the oil industry, the oil business, it's a profession, your profession that you have pursued in so many places for so many years. What do you see the challenges for fossil fuels, especially maybe for oil and petroleum?
I think it's worth reflecting that as of today, the energy matrix, about a third of our energy comes from coal, a third from natural gas, and a third from nuclear and renewables. The renewables, most of it is hydro. Wind and solar don't figure too much right now. The question is, going to the future, what can we hope for? Well, obviously, we still need to keep producing oil because only about half the oil we produce ends up being used as gasoline. The rest of it is used for lubricants, plastics, synthetic fibers, what you're wearing right now, Tom, fertilizers, baby oil, certain things you can't do without. For example, flying from here to Dallas-Fort Worth, the plane needs jet fuel. I don't think you can use solar to do that yet. Now, what we would like to see, of course, is more nuclear. Nuclear is far safer than people think. More people die of bee stings every year than they do from nuclear power plant accidents. And we'd like to see some breakthrough technologies come to pass, like making cold fusion finally work, which would be great because it would make us all independently energy rich.
So you do hold hope for us and for humankind?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Why do you have hope for humankind?
Looking at how far the world's come in the 50, 55 years I've been working, the changes have been phenomenal. You don't see it from one day to the next, but when you get to be my ripe old age, you can look back and say, boy, we didn't do this back then, and it's so much easier and cheaper to do it today.
Richard, it's been a fascinating conversation this Sunday afternoon. We've covered countries, we've covered cultures, people, industries. Thank you very much.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Tom.
You've been listening to Faith Matters with your host, Tom McGovern. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, working to improve health and quality of life in our community. Join us next Sunday for another edition of Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1, a service of Texas Tech Public Media.